Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
Well, welcome everybody to today's show. My name is Mark Kohler, your host, and excited to be here with you. One of my favorite times of the week, holding the radio show. Lots of fun for me, hopefully fun for you. Welcome to all you new listeners if you haven't listened before. I am your host, an entrepreneur, a CPA, attorney, real estate investor, family man, surfer, and recently a new Scoutmaster. I'm back in the saddle. I'm an Eagle Scout myself, and I love scouting. And in my local community and church, I've been asked to be the Scoutmaster of a bunch of boys again. And we're gearing up for some campouts. It's going to be fun. So any scouters out there on the call, you know what I'm talking about. It's a fun time loading up a van or truck full of boys and going off and camping and helping them start fires and not kill themselves. So that's the whole plan. So anyway, that's me, Mark Kohler, and excited to be with you here with you today on an exciting show. This is good. And I know some of you may have not clicked on this show topic because you're thinking, what? Trademarks, patents, business registrations, what's so important about that? Well, this is good stuff. And as usual, we have a couple tips at the beginning of each show and some interesting experiences we had with some clients this past week. And so I'm kind of excited to dive into today's show. We've got a lot of good stuff, and I hope that many of you find it rewarding. And I think it's going to save you some money, make you some money, and help you better live the American dream. Woo! So, hey, you know, and what I do at the beginning of every show is I just share a couple thoughts that I think can hopefully impact your life in a positive way. And I've got a little tax tip here for you. So let me share a few thoughts, and then we'll bring on our experts today for our show. We're excited to have several. We're going to have a panel of guests. It's going to be good. The message that I wanted to share, and this was in my newsletter today. Some of you are religious readers of the newsletter. Thank you. I put a lot of effort into creating some good articles. I had two new articles today go out that are blog posts, one on professional corporations and the second on homeowners' bill of rights that's rolling out this week on October 5th. There's more developments on this homeowner bill of rights, which is all part of that big settlement, five banks, $25 billion settlement with the government and multiple states. So if some of you are facing a little foreclosure or you're wanting to just modify your current loan on your personal residence, you're going to want to know those homeowner bill of rights. So make sure you click on that article today in the blog. You can get all of that at markjkohler.com. That's Mark, J as in Jolly, Kohler, K-O-H-L-E-R.com. So check out those blog articles. But the one little message I put in the newsletter at the beginning was diversify. And this touched me so much when I was writing this that I wanted to at least bring it up on the radio show. And I talked about three different meetings I had had with clients this last week. The first was with a client that had a small business, and they had this singular product or service, and they were totally focused on it. And when the market shifted, they began to struggle. They didn't have enough diversity in their business and another product line or revenue source. And it's been very, very difficult for him. I had another meeting with a client that had, he and his spouse, double W-2 jobs, and one of the spouses had lost their job, and they had nothing to fall back on. No small business, and they were meeting with me, scrambling, trying to create another source of income as an entrepreneur, but they weren't ready for it. And then I had another meeting with a client that had received an inheritance, and their spouse had passed away, and come to find out the life insurance wasn't adequate, the investments weren't adequate, and she was having to start a small business from scratch in her 40s, not really with the experience or background to do so. And what this taught me again is diversify. It is so important that all of us have multiple streams of income. And I know that can be unnerving for many of you that hate to multitask. Some of you want a very simple life. Well, I hate to say you live in a day and age where things are a little more unpredictable. You know, maybe 50 years ago you could start with a company and you'd be employed with them forever. Or you could start a small business and there wouldn't be the up and downs of the economy that we're facing now that really can put a lot of stress on yourself financially and personally and emotionally. So let me just say, diversify. Have always a little small business on the side. Be buying that one little rental property every year. If you already have a small business, make sure you're developing other products and services that can create additional revenue streams for your small business. Folks, it's not if, it's when you're going to have a disruption in your income. And the question is, do you have an additional source of income to fall back on? And what's cool about this is if you have an additional source of income you're cultivating, and there is no disruption at this point, that's great. That's extra money that you can set aside for retirement. It's extra money that you can set aside for a rainy day, or it's extra money you can use to have some fun and do what you love. So, diversify. That's my message today. All right. Well, I'm excited about diving into some little tips and strategies here, and we're going to have some special guests. Let me first bring on I want to hit a tip here before I start bringing on some of our guests today, because it's going to be just boom, boom, boom as soon as we start talking about guests, our topics today. So let me bring up a little tax tip. As you know, at the beginning of every show, I like to talk about a tax tip. And today's tax tip, and this is an important one, a lot of people ask about, what happens if I can't file my tax return on time? What am I going to be doing? What do the penalties and interest look like? So I know 90% of you have filed your tax return and it's over with. But just listen. Just sit back. Soak it up. Share this at lunch today with your friends if you want. But there's a small percentage of us out there that still haven't filed their tax return. I haven't filed my tax return yet. It's October 2nd. I got 15 days to get it done. And so we're working on it. But a lot of people still wait to the last minute, and that's okay. But what happens if you don't file your tax return on time? Let me give you what happens, because a lot of people wonder, well, what is it? Well, first of all, you're not going to jail. You're not going to go to jail if you don't file your tax return on time. Now, if you want to turn your nose to the IRS for several years in a row and write nasty letters and tell them you're never going to pay, you're going to end up like Wesley Snipes in jail. That's true. But if you just happen to not file your tax return on time, I don't want you to think that the IRS is going to come jumping through your windows with guns and have a laser sight, right on your forehead. It's not going to happen. But there are ramifications, so let me just say what they are. First, there's the failure to file penalty. Now, I'll go through this quickly, but I just want all of you to know this. If you don't file your tax return on time and you don't owe money, I should say this first. If you don't owe any money and you don't file your tax return on time, there's no penalty. Because if the IRS owes you money and you're due a refund or you don't have anything due, then there's no penalty, there's no interest, everything's cool because the IRS owes you money. Now, is it true you're going to get a nasty letter from the IRS and they're going to go, what's going on? Yes, and it could increase your chances of an audit because the IRS doesn't know what's going on, so you want to keep them informed. So I will always recommend you file your tax return even if you don't owe, just so that you keep the IRS off your back. But the first point is there's no penalties, no interest, no taxes if the IRS owes you. Now, let's say you owe the IRS some money and you don't file your return. This is the worst penalty of all. It adds up quick. There's a late filing penalty, and it's a half of 1% per month that starts to add up. And then it goes up to 25% of the amount of taxes you owe, and that's for just not filing. So there is a penalty for not paying, which we'll come to in a moment. But the first penalty is for not even filing. So let me just say this. If you think you owe the IRS, file your gosh darn tax return, because the first penalty you can avoid is the failure to file penalty. And again, it adds up quick. So if you owe the IRS and you can't pay, I know that feeling. We've all been there. I've had a time in my life where I couldn't pay my tax bill on time when I filed my tax return. That's okay. At least file your tax return so you avoid the failure to file penalty. Now, if you have money to pay and you file your return, you owe money and so you need to pay, but you don't have money and you file your return anyway to avoid that first penalty, what are the interests and penalties for failure to pay? So I've got to clarify my notes here. And the late payment penalty is half of 1% and goes up to 25%. And there's also interest that's the federal rate plus 3%. So if the federal rate's 4%, you're going to add 3 to that and you're going to be at 7%. So let me clarify this. And I know many of you aren't taking notes. This is, you know, something that you probably don't care about. But I just want to say, if you owe the IRS and you file your return, there's a late payment penalty of up to 25%, and then you're going to pay interest. If you don't file your tax return on time, then it's a 5% penalty of what you owe, and it can go up to a total of 100% of the taxes you owe. So not filing the return is, again, one of the worst things to do. So here's my moral of the story, and I'll move on, is before this coming October 15th, in 2 weeks, if you haven't filed your tax return, at least file it. Even if it's not completely accurate, get it off. Let's amend it later, but at least file your tax return. So get it off. All right. Now, excited here to welcome our first guest, Stephanie Andre from Chicagoland. Stephanie's partner, Maggie, was on the show last week for a couple minutes, and I want to welcome Stephanie to the show. She's the partner and one of the primary owners of Avid Solutions in Chicago. They are the sponsor for my workshop in Chicago this weekend, so I wanted to give them a little time on the show here. And if any of you think that's unfair, come sponsor one of my workshops and you'll get on the show. But Stephanie is in Chicago. She's going to be there this Saturday with me doing my wealth transformation workshop. And so, Stephanie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Mark. Thank you so much. Really happy to be on the show.
Well, thank you. And you know, I said this last week with Maggie on the show, is that I really like you to be at the workshop and be a sponsor, because you're in the business of real estate, mm-hmm. and real estate is one of the strategies I teach, and you help clients from around the country that want to invest in the Illinois, greater Chicago area. So maybe tell us about one of the deals you're doing right now.
Sure, and I wanted to say, you know, I was listening to you talk about really diversifying, and I really believe that's what we've been able to do. So we have access to great deals because we have a loss mitigation short sale negotiation company. Over the last 3 years, we've negotiated over 350 short sales. So we're getting access to these amazing deals, but then we also have a passion for real estate investment. So on the other side, we are using private money from people who have IRAs, including family, friends, and other investors we've met, even working with some of your clients, to lend to us, and we actually do fix and flips as well. So I want to talk about one of those deals today, if I could.
I love it. I think you hit the nail on the head. I like how you're drawing in a prior comment on my show of diversifying. So I think anybody out there that's just investing in Wall Street, why not do a little real estate deal on the side and work with a company like Stephanie's, where they can help you with a fix and flip or a rental? I know you do both.
Yes,
last week, Maggie was talking about a rental that was cash flowing. I was like, no way. So tell us about your fix and flip you're doing now. I like it.
Okay, actually, this is one we've done. We do have a few in process, but I wanted to go over this deal because I think it's actually one of your clients that lent to us on this. It was a property in the Jefferson Park area of Chicago, located at 5324 North Magnet Avenue. And we bought it actually as an REO. So most of the deals that we fix and flip are our short sales. However, we do also, you know, look for REO deals, which is bank owned.
Now let me interject, because some people may not know an REO. Why don't you explain what an REO is?
So an REO is a real estate owned property. So that is a property that actually did go through the foreclosure process, did go to auction, was bought back by the bank that held the note, and then it is actually put back on the market, you know, at a fair market value with a little bit of a discount, as it still is a distressed property.
Okay. All right. So you found one of these. What was the
purchase? We found one of these. Our acquisition price was $120,000.
Okay.
And we put $100,000 into rehabbing it, and we borrowed $210,000 on that. And our total profit on the deal,
so you were into this thing 230 grand?
220,000.
220. So you're into this thing 220. Wow. All
right. 220,000. Yeah. And we actually sold it. We got a contract in less than 2 weeks, and we sold it for 315,000. So our total profit after all our holding costs and everything was $59,727.31, to be exact.
Wow.
But the best part is that the private money lenders, with only having, you know, their money in for 6 months total, it was like 6 months almost to the day, they made, without doing anything again but lending us their money, $20,972.51.
And how much was their total first position hard money lending amount?
$210,000.
So you were into it personally, $10,000, but borrowed another $210,000 to do it.
Yes, exactly.
And they made about $20,000, so they made about a 10% rate of return in 6 months. So they were averaging about a 20% return
annualized. Per exactly. Yes.
Well, that's a little better than Wall Street.
Yep, I think it's a lot better.
And what's neat here is I know that you help clients not only that want to loan money on first position, hard money trust deeds, but looking at the big picture, you only invested $10,000 and you made $60,000.
Exactly. And usually we don't invest, you know, if we need to go over, we will. But, yeah, it's a great time to be in real estate. I'll tell you that right now.
Wow, I love it. Well, okay, so I know, let me just say it, if for any of you that are at my workshop in Chicago this weekend, Stephanie's going to be there showing two or three deals that they're working on or are available so that people in my workshop could get involved. And I know they'll be helping me out with the registrations and everything. I'm excited. It should be really good. So,
really
Stephanie, thanks so much.
Yeah. No problem. Thank you, and we look forward to seeing you on Saturday.
Yeah, you bet. And now, if people want to get a hold of you, why don't you throw out your phone number?
Okay. If you want to get a hold of me, you can reach us at 773-446-7646. And we are located on the north side of Chicago, our office. So we'd love for you to come and meet with us and talk about your strategies.
Okay. And that's avidsolutionsllc.com.
Yep.
And the number is 773-446-7646. Well, Stephanie, thank you so much, and I'll see you Saturday.
All right. See you on Saturday, Mark. Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. Well, very interesting, guys. Now, I'm just going to say I've got clients all over the country doing deals like this every day. Now, is there risk involved? Yes. I don't know if you want to use hard money the whole time. That can be a little risky, but you may want to be a hard money lender and just praying that Stephanie doesn't come through so that you end up with the property. So there's a lot of different roles you can play in a deal like that. I highly recommend you, if you are interested in the Illinois area, give Stephanie a call, see what deals they have, shop around, be very careful, and gosh, it's just a Southwest Air flight away. Get up there, check out the properties, kick some tires. Okay, well, let's dive into our topic for the day. We've got three different experts on the line, and I want to just introduce them here, and we're going to run through all sorts of topics here in regards to business registrations, trademarks, patents, and this is really, really helpful for any small business owner. So I hope that, again, many of you find this to give you additional value and opportunity in your own business. Also, because of this topic being so specific today, I would really like to encourage any questions. So I'm going to open up my Outlook email right now for current emails. And if anybody has a question, please email me at mark@markjkohler.com or mark@kkoslawyers.com. Those are the easy ones. So mark@markjkohler.com. Send me an email. If you're on our chat line, you can type in a question on the chat line. Or if you're listening on your phone, press the number 1 to talk to Lisa running our studio. Lisa Owens, she does a fantastic job. Talk to Lisa, and she'll bring you on the show for a live question. So don't feel like your question needs to go unanswered on this specific topic today. Please bring it on. Shoot me an email, and I'll be refreshing my email here throughout the show. Okay, so our first of our panel, here, first we have, I'll just bring them down here in line, we have Jerem Bergesen, an attorney licensed in, gosh, two or three, four states. He's one of our business planning attorneys in our office. He's been to court many a time. He's very skilled when it comes to different business, tax, law, litigation issues, kind of a jack of all trades. We love him in the office. I know he helps many, many clients around the country. And he knows quite a bit, again, about these trademarks and patents. So he's going to be fielding some questions on that from me and from you, the listener. Jerem, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Mark.
Appreciate you coming on. Good. A regular contributor. So appreciate it, Jerem.
That's right.
There you go. Now, our second guest, who has been on the show before, and she is amazing. She has helped thousands of our clients around the country. Many of you know her as the amazing Holly Butterfield. She is our paralegal in charge of business registrations in all 50 states, and she fields a lot of phone calls and interacts with many of you, the listeners. So many of you already know Holly, but if I need a business registration question answered, I call Holly. She knows all the answers. She's amazing. Holly, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mark.
We're glad to have you here.
I'm glad to be on.
Well, exciting. And and then our third expert on our panel today, we have Lee Chen. He's our attorney running our offices out in California, right down the hall from me. Lee Chen is primarily a litigator, but also a business attorney, helping clients around the country. And he has got plenty of court time. I just watched Law & Order on TV. He actually goes to court. So we're excited to have Lee here, too. Welcome to the show, Lee.
Hi, Mark. It's great to be on the show again.
Well, we're glad to have you. Okay. Well, I'm gonna. I don't know. I'm so excited. The world is my oyster today. We've got so many different ways to go with this show. I'm gonna bring out Holly first. The reason why is I want to grab the low hanging fruit. This is the easy stuff. This is something that affects everybody listening to this show. I can guarantee it. So I want to hit that with Holly first. She'll stay on with us throughout the show. But let's maybe talk about this business registration thing. Because any entrepreneur out there has to be aware of business registrations. It's just a necessary evil. So if I go out and form my company, I've got to register in the state where I'm doing business. And I could register in one state, or I could register in multiple states as a foreign company. But Holly, once I do that, is my job done?
No, or do I need
to kind of somehow keep on top of that?
Well, when we're talking about registrations today, we're talking about renewals. So once you've already filed your entity, wherever they may be, you have to keep them going. You have to renew them. So that's what I do here. I take care of everybody's entities that hand them off to me, and we make sure that they stay active and in compliance.
Very good. Yeah, now, and see, this is this annual registration. So I'm going to ask the first question. Holly,
okay.
Do I have to do it? Can I do it at Christmas time? Can I do it at January 1st? When do I do my annual registration?
Okay, it just depends on the state that you're registered in. So if you say, for instance, California, and you have a corporation, your renewal month is always going to be in the month in which you're registered. So say you went and registered one up October of this year. Well, next year, you're going to need to be renewed October 1st, 2013. So again,
now,
it just
Arizona
varies
is different.
State to state. Arizona is very different. And keep in mind, too, it just depends on what type of entity you have, too. So there are it varies on between the state and the type.
Okay, now Arizona, give us an example of Arizona. If I register in October in Arizona,
okay,
when do I register?
In October. But if you have an LLC is perpetual. So you don't have an annual renewal for Arizona, but you have to keep information for it up date. So we review it, you know, even though you don't have a renewal, I'm still going to review it. I'm going to still make sure that those who are on file with the state are still in that company and that their address is current. So those are still some things you need to keep in mind. So even though you may not have a renewal, you're still obligated by state statute to make sure that your company information is updated as it occurs.
Now, some states, if I register in October, then I turn around and my annual registration is in January. I thought that was Arizona,
absolutely.
But it's not.
Yep. No. So, we've got Tennessee that we have to worry about. Michigan we have to worry about. So, it just varies on the states. You either have to renew by February 15th or we've just got to get you renewed at the very, very first of the year.
Now, Holly, I would assume that all the states are so excited for us to pay our bill every year so that we can have this wonderful corporation or LLC. And let me say, folks, this is still, there's some great tax reasons to have a corporation or LLC. There's great asset protection reasons, but we have to keep it in good standing. So, Holly, I would assume that all these states are so excited, they're going to send us a little reminder every year so that we know right when to pay and how much to pay.
Not really. No.
My gosh, Holly, why is this so difficult?
I don't ever understand that, Mark. But that's why we have our company maintenance program, is we keep track of it. Because I tell you what, a lot of states, some states still do. They have that little good warm fuzzy feeling that they send you every year. Hey, you're due to renew. But there are a majority that don't. And a lot of people pay out of pocket unnecessarily for penalty fees because they didn't track it. And then, of course, their status has now changed. So you would think that they want it, but some of them don't.
Oh, my gosh. Now, let's just confirm here. If I don't pay my annual registration, my company goes into this defunct status, and my asset protection is threatened. I could trigger an IRS dissolution, so now I've got to file a tax return, and if I miss the deadline, I got penalties. Is it easy
You're
to
just opening
reinstate
up
a company?
You know what it is? It is. But, again, it varies upon which state you're doing business in. Some states, they give you a grace period. You know, just pay a late penalty and then we'll get you back into active status. Some have no sympathy whatsoever. Once you go on beyond that deadline, you've got to start some processes over, and it can be quite costly.
Oh, boy. Now, this is where the corporate cleanup comes in, and I know you do a lot of cleanups for clients. I know there's people on the show right now listening going, I haven't paid a fee for a year or two. I don't know what my status is. I haven't done minutes. I haven't done any of this stuff. Holly, can you – what would you do? I mean, you could help them. What would you normally do?
Absolutely. Well, one is don't panic. Just email me the name of your entity and where it's registered, and we'll start to take a look at it. We'll let you know right away is if it's fixable or not. And what I say by fixable is whether or not the state's going to let you just reinstate it or if we've got to refile you. And we can let you know within the same day.
Okay. Now, I want to ask a unique question here. So now everybody out there, you know, this is a good tax planning opportunity because every time you do your annual renewal, I want you to do an annual meeting. Go to Vegas, see one of the Cirque du Soleil shows. I would recommend the water one where they dive off into the water in the stage. It's pretty cool. But go to Vegas, go see a Cirque du Soleil show, write it off as your annual meeting. That's okay. And all your registration fees are a tax write-off too. Keep your company in good standing. But Holly, sometimes we get notices in the mail that look really official. And
absolutely,
this is very common. There's a lot of scams out there too. And this is why I put in the newsletter today entitled the show Beware. Now Lee's gonna talk about another major issue when it comes to the name of your company. But when it comes to these little notices, what's going on out there?
Well, there are a lot of companies out there that are sending solicitations, practically scaring you to death, telling you that you've missed a filing, and they want you to pay a fee to them and sign your name on this little sheet that they send you. And basically what you're doing by then is you're sending them money it doesn't belong to them. You're 95% of the time, it's not even a renewal time frame for you, and you've just given them permission to basically file things on your company's behalf. Very dangerous stuff. California is probably one of the states out there that has the biggest problems right now. So rule of thumb is just always take a look at what it is. Take the time and read it. If you're still unsure about what it is, send it my way and I'll authenticate it. I'll take a look at it and let you know, yeah, that's authentic. Let's see what we need to do for you. DBAs. California's got a problem.
Hold on. Before you get going off on there real quick, let me just reemphasize. You downplayed your role, and I think it's very important, and I want all my clients to know this, and if you're a follower on our radio show or whatever, if you get one of these weird notices, give just fax it over to Holly and give her a call. We're not going to charge you to look at it, and we're going to try to get you on our company maintenance system so that every year you don't have to worry about this. But just give it to us. We'll help you out. And on that note, Holly, how much is the company maintenance program? It's got to be thousands of dollars for you to keep track of this for everybody because it's so valuable.
It's $150 a year. It's so affordable, plus the renewal fee. So, say, California, you've got a corporation, you're looking at the $150 plus the $25 renewal fee. And then we forward that renewal fee, obviously, to California when we get you taken care of. It is worth it. Peace of mind. We're actually, you know, saving you money. Because I see so many people that come in to me and say, I didn't file, I didn't renew. You're more than likely going to have a penalty fee, and you've just paid the state more than what you really needed to. I hate seeing that.
Oh, I know. Or people that are registered in the wrong state. Holly can get you dissolved in Nevada, move to the right state you're supposed to be in. Very common topic we hit all the time here on the show, too. Okay, last question, last comment, and this is good for everybody. What about a DBA? So I set up my doing business as, I register my name. You see, this is why it affects all of us on this radio show, is that some of you are like, well, Mark, I don't even have a corporation or LLC. I just have a DBA. So Holly, with a DBA, can I just throw caution to the wind and forget about this as well?
No, you can't forget about DBAs. It's really important. A lot of counties that you register your DBA in or your fictitious business name, they're one and the same. Once you don't renew them, the name becomes available. So you really have to watch what county you're in and what their statutes and codes are. But just know that once you get them set up, they'll always tell you when they need to be due for renewal. And it just depends on, again, the state and the county. And watch the mail you get, because California, again, has got some really big problems with solicitations going out, and they're going out really hard to people with DBAs right now. DBAs don't need to be renewed until every 5 years. I mean, be careful with what you have within regards to mail coming in. Don't give these people money, because you won't recover it.
No,
you won't ever get that money back.
I love it. Great comment. Okay. Well, okay, so there's our business registration issues that we needed to cover today. And if anybody has a question regarding this, Holly is not going to get off the line. She'll stay with us for the rest of the show. So if you have a comment or question, let me check the chat line, see if anybody's typed a question in here. Nope, we just got to reach Holly, call her at the office, or Holly at kkoslawyers.com. And I just checked my email, so no questions there. Okay, so if anybody has a question for Holly, please throw it out. Now let's go over to Lee for a minute. This is, I think, an important issue. Gosh, you know, I do my job. I set up my entity. Now this is interesting because Lee got two clients this week dealing with this very issue. So I wanted to have Lee on the show about this topic. But let's say I set up my entity. I do my registration. I call up Holly Butterfield, and I'm Holly. Holly sent me up. You guys, I joke about Holly Butterfield because she always calls me Mark Kohler. She won't call me Mark. She just calls me Mark Kohler, so I call her Holly Butterfield. So if you you call up Holly Butterfield and you go, Holly, hook me up. I need to be on your company maintenance program. And everything's going along fine, you think. And then someone sends you a nasty letter and says, hey, you can't use that name. And you're like, what? I just registered my company. Why can't I use my name? So Lee Chen, the master, tell us, what happened here? Why were these clients getting letters from people about the name?
Well, you know, the name, you know, is a name that the Secretary of State allows you to use. However, a lot of people, you know, use names that become associated with what they do. And, you know, if it's a name that, you know, they use to, you know, that people think about, that becomes part of, you know, what they do, and people think about the service or product and they think about the name, that's when you start needing some extra protection to be able to protect your use of that name. And so we get a lot of situations where, you know, two different people, two different companies are doing similar types of things, and they get into a fight about, you know, who has the right to use this name. You know, is it causing confusion when somebody is using, you know, my name for some, you know, it's used by somebody else, you know, who has the rights to that? And that's really where, You know, you need to call our office, maybe speak to Jerem, you know, getting set up with a trademark or something like that would really help. And it's kind of a race to get the protection. And so it's really important if you want to protect that name that you take steps to do that.
Okay, now let's put a little practical twist on this. Okay, some of you are like, okay, Lee, that sounded intelligent, but I don't know what the heck you're saying. So let me throw this out. Let's say I have a new little business. This is off the cuff. I'm just going to kind of play around with this. But let's say I have a pizza place, and I've got this little hut. It's like a little tiki hut, and it's pretty cool. It's like a Hawaiian pizza. I'm coming this off the cuff here. So I set up this little tiki hut looking thing. It's Hawaiian pizza specials, you know, but I name my company Tiki Hut Pizza. So let's just throw that out. So I name my pizza place Tiki Hut Pizza. Well, things are going along well, and people say, well, come to the Pizza Hut, or it's the Tiki Hut. Go to the Tiki Hut Pizza. There's a chance I could get a nasty letter from you-know-who, Pizza Hut, Inc., because they don't like the way I'm playing off the word hut in regards to pizza. Right, Lee? I mean, that could happen, right? That's the issue.
Absolutely, and you probably would get a letter if they found out about it, you know, if you're online or something like that. You definitely would get a letter of something like that if you're doing something similar to them, which may cause confusion.
Okay, so now some of you listening are going to go, I know some of you are throwing your, you know, paper across your table going, what? I set up my company, and then some company in Nebraska sends me a nasty letter and says, you can't use that name anymore. And people, we had two clients this week send us nasty letters they got, and it's not going to be pretty. We've got a little fight on our hands because our clients are going to have to rechange their company name, their branding, their website, and everything because their name is too similar to another company across the country. And if I'm going to set up a Tiki Hut pizza place, I got to realize I might have an issue with Pizza Hut. And the same thing could be in your business, whether you're in real estate, MLM marketing, internet marketing, or whatever, you've got to be careful. So I'm going to throw out a suggestion. Lee, I'm interested to hear your thoughts, but I'll throw out the first one. The first thing is, when you're naming your business, go out on the web and type in some different variations. If you're going to open up Tiki Hut Pizza, maybe go on the web and type in Hut Pizza or Pizza Hut and see if there's a company out there that has a similar name. Because if there's a huge company doing the same thing you're doing with a similar name, you can almost guarantee yourself a nasty letter. Lee, what else would you do?
Well, absolutely. I mean, if this is your idea and you want this name to be associated with your idea, definitely, you know, beforehand, do your research. But you know, even if you are using that name, you want to take steps to protect your use of that name. Using the name gives you some protection, but, you know, registering it will also give you some protection. But also after you register it, you know, you need to make sure that if you want to protect that name, that other people aren't using that name as well.
Now, so, and when Lee says register, I'm going to put the words in his mouth. He's saying once you register your company and you start working with Holly Butterfield, then you're going to maybe trademark your name. And you could also search for the trademark office to see if anybody else is using that name. Now, let me throw out an important point here because I don't want to freak anybody out. If you're, you know, Stephanie Andre. Stephanie was on the call early on in the show. So Steffi's got a little business in Chicago, and she's got her little, you know, real estate deal. She named her business kind of this unique name, and she's really not marketing herself nationwide. Maybe some of you have a little business where you're doing sales on eBay in your basement. Fine. Is Pizza Hut going to come down on you? Probably not. But once you start advertising your company, that's when the exposure becomes more of a concern. So again, for many of you that have named your company, you might be sitting here going, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to change my company name. But keep in mind, if you're not out marketing the heck out of it, no one's going to care. The more you draw attention to yourself, the more concerned you need to be about your company name. And you could search for a trademark if you wanted to, and we'll bring Jerem out on that process. But Lee, what are you doing with these people that got these letters this week? What's the plan?
Well, I mean, you know, we have to do some research, you know, to see, you know, again, it's a race sometimes for the use of the name. So we have to see, you know, who was using the name first, who registered it with the trademark, is it similar? Like you said, is it geographical? And the problem is in the internet. You know, when you have the internet available, which reaches, you know, the whole world, you know, arguments can be made that, you know, even if you're only doing business in a specific geographical area, that you're causing confusion with someone on the other side of the country. And so, you know, it really becomes, at that point, it becomes almost a litigation process, a give and take where you need a fighter there to kind of, you know, protect your interest. And so, you know, we're still kind of at the beginning stages of it. You know, we may need to figure out who has the right and, you know, negotiate so that, you know, everyone can use the name that they use without stepping on each other's toes.
Okay. I like it. All right. Well, great advice. I know, Lee, that you're going to maybe fight it out for these clients, or maybe they're just going to give up on their name. We'll see how it plays out. Okay, now we've got a couple questions in here. Stay on the line, Lee, so I may need your thought on this one. This is from Sinan. He says, Mark, we were told by an Ohio attorney that we cannot record our name in just DBA when recording deeds. So they've set up a DBA, and they want to record a deed in the name of the DBA. He says the attorney said we have to put our full legal name, S-Corp, DBA XXX. What is up with that? What is the point of using a DBA anyway? Well, Sinan, that's a great question. When you are recording deeds or even doing contracts or official documents and you're using a DBA, it's typical that you're going to have to say S-Corp, DBA XXX, or Mark J. Kohler, DBA Kohler hot dog on a stick, or whatever it is. So it's very common that you're going to have to use the official name XYZ DBA. But here's the reason why you use DBAs. DBAs are there for your marketing purposes, not for holding title. A DBA is not to hide. A DBA is to reserve a name, Kohler hot dog on a stick, so that no one else in Southern California can use Kohler hot dog on a stick. So I'm going to reserve a DBA. Now, we're going to talk to Jeremy in a minute about trademarks, but because there may be some other guy in Texas with Kohler hot dog on a stick. But at least in my local area, the reason for a DBA, Sinan, is for marketing, because you want to reserve that name so when you go advertise in the local area, you can be reasonably protected that some other bozo is not going to be out there doing Kohler hot dog on a stick, because you reserve the name. And if they do use your name, you can call up Lee, and Lee will write him a nasty letter. So that's why you do a DBA, is for marketing. Lee, would you agree?
Yeah, and I just also want to add something that's kind of not really said in that question is a DBA does not give you any extra asset protection. It is not its separate legal entity. And so that is why, you know, when you hold title to something, it's got to be held by a recognized legal entity, either a person or a corporation or something that is legally recognized. And a DBA is not a separately legally recognized entity.
I love it. Very good point. Okay. Now, Dan, another question from Dan. He says, Mark, I want to incorporate with a name that is very similar but not precisely matched to any others in this state. Will the Secretary of State take an official position on this? It's a startup business, and I don't want to spend much time or money researching it. And this question is for Holly Butterfield. Holly?
Well, we can go back to the state and get it approved. If the state says there's a conflict, we may be able to reach those who are actually using the name. Goodness, it just varies on that. If it's rejected,
well, some states will let it go through.
Some states, yes. It just depends on the state you're going to be registering. Absolutely, but you know, I'm going to give California as an example. We always verify names when we register a new entity, and if there is a conflict, we are told, you know, there's a conflict, and here is what the conflict is, and then from there we can determine what we need to do for that conflict. Whether it's just a pull on that name, we need to maybe, we can't use holdings with that name, or you can use enterprises. It just varies.
Okay, all right. And Dan, I would just add to Holly's comment that if you've got a name called Green Tree Holdings and there's another Green Tree Holding Company or something like that, you might have to change yours to Green Tree Investments or Green Tree Enterprises.
Enterprises.
So you can, yeah. So you can always add an adjective. But what we'll do, I think, Dan, the big thing is just go out on the web. Do a little bit of research, see if there's any companies in the area. If you've already gone to the state website, like you said, and there's one that's very similar, Holly's going to tell you if, on average, if it's going to get rejected or not. I mean, she sees enough of this that she's going to go, good luck, Dan, you're screwed. Or, you know, she'll say, you need to change it. So I think it's really good to just give her a call. Holly, what would you say? I could tell you one.
Yes, give me a call because we can still play on that name. We could maybe even make that name that you wanted in the front of your name to be in the middle of it. We can just play on it. There are several different options for you. So don't give up. Just give me a call and we can come up with some resolutions.
Okay, perfect. All right. I got a little email back from Sanan. She says, Mark, it's a she, not a he. And Sanan, you're right. I'm so sorry. I did that a consult with you just recently, and too. You know, I'm on a radio show. There's some pressure here. So, you know, back off. I know. Okay. No, I'm just joking. You're awesome. Okay. All right. Now, I've got another question here. This is from Marty. Another one of those names. It could be male or female Marty. So I'm so sorry. I'm going to say Marty asks, I was told putting TM, now this is a trademark question. So we're going to bring out, you know what, Marty, hold that question. Here's what I'm going to do. I want to bring out Jaron Bergeson. Jaron Bergeson is our attorney in our office that has done a lot of trademark and patent. Well, we're not a patent law office, so we don't do register patents for clients. We can guide him through the process and maybe a provisional patent, but we are not a patent and trademark office per se. There are patent attorneys out there. But we can certainly help you with a trademark. We do a lot of trademarks for clients. So, Jerem, why don't – and Marty, we're going to come to your question here in 2 seconds. So, Jerem, what is a trademark? Why would I – I've registered my company. I made sure it was a little different. I listened to what Lee said. I made sure that I kind of did my research and no one else is out there like me. Why would I do a trademark, and what is it?
Well, you know, a trademark, I mean – directly from the USPTO's website. It's a word, phrase, symbol, or design that identifies and distinguishes the source of goods or services. So you can have a situation where there's not a registered company in your state that has the name that you want to use. But that doesn't mean that you can then use that name necessarily. It doesn't necessarily mean that you can then use that same name that you used for your business entity to market and describe and show to other people your product. If someone else has a trademark and has been using a valid registered trademark and has been using that that name in association with a similar product or service. And
okay,
so,
now let me throw this out. So let's say I'm here in California and I want to go out and set up Microsoft Inc. Wow. Okay, so there's Microsoft. And let's just say, for example, Microsoft doesn't have any stores. We know that there's a Microsoft store down here at the mall. We know they're all over the state. But let's say that Microsoft is stayed in Washington, and I run down to the state and set up Microsoft Inc. It's available in my state, but they've registered their trademark in Washington, D.C. So
right.
They take precedence, even though it's available in my state?
That's correct. There's you can name your entity that, but you can't use that name then to go ahead and market your products. You'd probably have to go get a DBA or something and do business under a different name because Microsoft has that name. Now, Microsoft has that name in conjunction with lots of software and computer products and services. If you wanted to sell tortillas under that name, you might be okay. You might not. It depends. Microsoft is that big. But, you know, you certainly couldn't do anything computer-related with that Microsoft name, even though that's the name of your entity.
So I could set up – this is fun. I liked how you use tortillas. So
yeah.
We could call it Microsoft Tortillas, Inc., and these are such soft tortillas. Some of you like a hard shell. But some of you that like soft tortillas would say, ooh, that's cool, Microsoft Tortillas, Inc. And it's similar, but it has nothing to do with computers. Could I apply for a trademark, Microsoft Tortillas?
You may be able to. Like I said, Microsoft is so pervasive in parts of all kinds of people's lives that Microsoft would probably try to fight it, but and maybe they wouldn't. But there's almost no likelihood of confusion there. So provisionally, I'd say you may be able to get that trademark because it's completely different than what Microsoft is doing. They don't sell tortillas, so you may be able to get that. But again, Microsoft is such a huge brand that it could be difficult. And the other thing is you'd have a fight because Microsoft has the resources to fight you. And if you don't mind, I just wanted to comment real quickly on what Lee was talking about. If you get a letter in the mail, a nasty letter from Microsoft or from Pizza Hut or from a company that you know the name of and that is a big national or multinational company, that's going to be serious. They're going to have the resources to fight you, and you may have to eventually raise the white flag. If you get a letter from Joe Schmo in, you know, South Dakota, who has a small business or isn't even incorporated, that sends you that same letter, and it doesn't have legal citations or anything like that. I mean, you need to gauge how seriously you need to take the nasty letters, and part of that it depends on who sends it to you. And that's the kind of research that we can do, that Lee can do, that I can do to make sure that you respond appropriately to that sort of letter.
Okay, I like it. Now this sets the stage for Marty's question. He says, Mark, I was told putting TM, that's a capital T and a capital M, behind a name or phrase would be adequate for protection of use. Is that true? What needs to be done?
The TM gives you some protection. That means that I am claiming common law trademark rights in this name. And that I'm using it in commerce. And you have some limited geographical protection for putting TM behind a name. There's a difference if you have an unregistered trademark, because you don't have to register your trademark. If it's a word, phrase, symbol, or design that identifies a service or a product, then you have a trademark, or a service mark. You'll hear those two terms. Trademark is supposed to be for a product, service mark for a service, although trademark gets used for both. If you put a TM behind there, you have a trademark. What you don't have is a registered trademark, and that's where you can put the circle with the R inside of it behind it instead of the TM. Then you have a registered trademark, federally registered trademark, with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office.
So I have a feeling.
Go ahead.
So I have a feeling the R beats out the TM.
The R beats out the TM. The R is going to, in most cases, trump the TM. And you want to be the guy, you want to be the company with the R, not the TM, because then you're swinging the big stick.
There you go. I like that. You want to be the guy. Everybody's got a guy.
Yeah.
You want to be that guy.
Be that guy.
Okay, now let's put a little context in this. Again, folks, any questions you want to email me, I'm taking live emails, live calls, and live chat lines. So we've got a lot of questions here. One of the questions I just got via email is from Susan. She says, how much is a trademark? Is this an expensive process? What are we looking at, Jerome?
There's a filing fee with the United States, the USPTO, that's the United States Patent and Trademark Office, of $275 to $325 per class of products that you want to register your trademark for. That may be a lot of Greek there. Class of products or services, what are you talking about? You have to register your trademark in a certain class of products or services. If you want to register the trademark across several classes, it's generally $275 per class. So that's just the government's fee. We can help you with the application and do a trademark search and all of that. If you use our services, we charge $750 for our services, and that includes all of the initial searches and doing the trademark application, answering a couple follow-up, because the USPTO will often ask for additional information. We'll answer we'll answer up to two of those. That's included for the $750. That's basically what it costs. If you do it yourself and you try to run through the application and it's all done online and it's the federal government, so it's not the simplest thing in the world, but it can be done. You just have to pay the filing fee. If you want a professional, one of us, to help you through that, or I guess it's me. I do the trademarks here with the firm. Then it's $750 plus that filing fee.
Okay. I like it. Okay. So, Susan, good question. I guess if you want to trademark Microsoft tortillas, that would be in the food line. But if you also wanted to create Microsoft tortilla frisbees, that might be in the toy line or the recreational equipment line. If
right.
you're going to throw tortillas as frisbees. I'm reaching here. Okay, now
I like it, though.
We got another technical question. This is a good one. This is a tough one. This is Steve down in Arkansas. I'm going to throw that out because Steve's my man. Love him. Steve says, I'm going to pose this to Jerem. He says, I thought I had renewed online at the 10-year point one of our trademarks. Something happened in the process and the renewal did not process. So the renewal didn't take effect. Since we previously owned the trademark, would I have to begin at square one in the application process, or is there a shorter path? That's a tough one. Do you know the answer off the top of your head, Jerem?
You know, off the top of my head, I don't. I know there are situations where you can revive an existing trademark if in the intervening amount of time nobody has used or registered that trademark, but I'm not sure. I wouldn't be comfortable off the top of my head saying yes or no. You may be able to, and I'd have to look into that.
Yeah, great question, Steve. That's like I said, it's a difficult one. My reaction here is that if your trademark has lapsed, and this is for anybody out there, if your trademark's lapsed, to get the protection going, again, it's a new application, but you might be able to fill that gap with a retroactive renewal. And the question would be just calling the trademark office. And
yeah.
I know Jerem could do that. But even just as a layperson, just call the trademark office.
Yeah.
And I would say, I want a retroactive renewal. That's what you're looking for.
Yeah, there are a lot of questions the USPTO won't answer, but I think that's one that they would.
That's right. They are a pain.
Yes.
Good question. I mean, good comment. Okay, now let's, in our last few minutes, we've only got 2 minutes for this, and we've been getting a lot of questions. This is great. Is patents. When do I move from a trademark to a patent? When does that make sense?
I think the easiest way to explain it is a trademark is what you call your product or service. That's what you're protecting there. With a patent, you're protecting the product itself. That I have a property right in this product or this part of the product, or I've improved an existing product by doing X, Y, or Z. That process, that design, that's what you're protecting with the patent. And patents are a different animal than trademarks. They are, like you said, they're more complicated. We're not, none of us are patent lawyers. We haven't passed the patent bar. So we're not authorized to file patent applications as attorneys with the USPTO. We can give you basic guidance on doing it yourself and what's required as in the nuts and bolts, but we can't represent you as patent attorneys. We're not licensed to do so.
Okay, perfect. Now, in patents, there's different levels of patents. There's different costs involved. Typically, you could have an engineering component. It can be expensive, but some people use this provisional patent procedure that can streamline it. Would that be the case?
That's right. You can file a provisional patent, which is application, which will give you the right to then file a non-provisional patent application, I believe, within 12 months after your first one is approved, and you can make changes and amend and abandon it if you'd like to do so. It doesn't have nearly the amount of formalities that are involved in a non-provisional application. A provisional application in and of itself doesn't give you anything except for the right to, within a certain amount of time, and like I said, I think it's 12 months, file a non-provisional application for that same invention. It basically gives you time to get your stuff together, get involved with a patent attorney that can make sure. That's the other thing I want to put out there.
Okay, now hold
not,
on. Hey, Jerem, I'm going to have to cut you off. We've only got a few seconds left for the show. Oh, I love it. This is so good, and you're throwing out so much content. Let me just tell everybody, if you're thinking about a trademark or a patent, Jerem's the guy to go to. If you're getting a nasty letter from someone and you need a fighter, Lee Chen is your guy. We've got one there that can help you out. And, of course, Holly, our wonderful Holly, she's our gal, helping out with annual registration. So we've got three. Guys, I want to say thank you. Thank you, Jerem, Holly, and Lee. Three incredible experts here helping us on the show today. Good stuff. Thanks again for being on the show, guys.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks. I wanted to hear a thanks from everybody. I hope you're still out there. And thank you, the listener, for being here today. Another amazing Mark Kohler show. And I am so honored that you would take the time to be with me. I will continue to provide amazing content every week. And I want to say thanks again to our amazing contributors today for being on the show. And wish all of you the best. Keep living the dream.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.